Alrighty, we've been journeying through the stories of Jesus. And man, they're so beautiful, but they're also so challenging. And if you even just look up here today, you can see these words that are written on the wall there. And there's this word that says, listen with curiosity. Are we listening? Really listening? Are we leaning into these stories? And we're going to look at another story that Jesus taught today, and it's the parable of the unmerciful servant. Stephen's going to take us through that today, but he's just asked that I read the story as it's lengthy, and it's found in the book of Matthew. So if you have your Bibles, if you could go to Matthew, that'd be awesome. And hear Jesus' voice in this, asking this question, can you hear me now? Is your spirit listening? Are you really listening to these things? In Matthew chapter 18, I believe it is, verse 21, Peter comes to Jesus and asks him a question. Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times? Jesus answered, I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. Then he goes on to tell a story. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay his debt. At this, the servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay back everything. The servant's master took pity on him and canceled the debt and let him go. But that same servant went out, and he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay me back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant, too, fell to his knees and begged him, be patient with me, and I will pay it back. But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged and went out and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said, I canceled all the debt of yours because you begged me. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant, just as I had on you? In his anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back everything that he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother or your sister from your heart. Is the words from Matthew, and now let's hear from Stephen.
Thanks, mate. How are we doing this morning? We good? I've got to be honest, the weight of this message is pretty heavy, particularly in light of standing next to this flash new pulpit. I've been away 2 weeks and we get new pulpits. So it's awesome. I feel like taking a knee in memory for the music stand that we've had for the last 15 years. Anyway, this morning we get to talk of this parable, the stories of Jesus. We're part of this incredible kingdom on earth called the kingdom of heaven. And if the king of that kingdom tells stories, then we better listen. We better listen to the stories that he's telling, and we better listen to the meaning that is behind them, because they're important. This last week, I've been traveling I was in Chicago for work. I was attending the Global Leadership Network Summit, which happens as part of Willow Creek Church. And just a side note, we will be hosting that again this year. I would encourage you highly to get along to it. There's some incredible teaching, amazing speakers. It's a highlight of my year when I get to be a part of that. But as part of that, I had some work colleagues, and Ruth was traveling with us, and we went to a restaurant. And I would say, and it's a big call, but this restaurant would be the best restaurant experience I've ever had in my life. We like to have a meal together with the team. These guys are there that I take as part of a reward trip through the business that I work at. and we'd like to have a nice meal. And so Ruth and I went and checked out this place the night before to just make sure it was, you know, what we'd want, and the food was great. And it was a cool vibe. It was lunchtime, so it was a little bit quieter, and we had a look at the menu, and there's some great things on it. So we decided that this would be our special dinner that we'd have with the team that we were traveling with. As we looked through the menu, there was, you know, your standard a la carte menu and all the things you'd expect in a normal restaurant. But there was this one menu item, which was this special item where you paid a certain amount, and then it's up to the kitchen what they bring out. They determine what you'll eat that evening. And so it's totally out of your control. And we looked at it and thought, actually, this would be kind of cool, but it was pretty expensive. So we decided we'd just shelve that one for the time being. Anyway, we get into the restaurant on the night. We've got our team with us, and we sit at the table, and the place is just buzzing. It's an amazing setting. It looks great. Everyone's just amped to be there, and it looked like it was going to be a great night. As we sat down, the head waiter comes up, and we happened to secure the head guy who was looking after us, which was great. His name was Dan, or as he liked to call himself, Dan the Man. And he came and he served us. And as he came to our table and as we sat down, he came out with a cocktail shaker, shaking this cocktail drink, and then just started pouring it into our glass. Now, I'm not a big cocktail drinker, but if it's free, I'll definitely give it a shot. And so we had these free cocktails. And then Dan summoned somebody else over who brought out some food. And these are all free. I'm hoping they're free. And they're bringing them out, and we start eating these little tasters, and they were great as well. That was a cost to Dan to do that. It cost the restaurant. Little did they know that I was going to shelve the idea of going the cheap menu and then buy the big menu, because I was just so in awe of the experience I was having at that moment. Ruth and I looked at each other, said, we've probably got to try this special thing, right, where they just bring whatever they want out. And so we decided we would do that. And it was absolutely phenomenal. The food was incredible. I got to try things. There was this, do you know what a tomahawk steak is, where they bring out the big steak on the rib and it sits in the middle of the table and they slice it up at the table. And it was just perfect. We had about 8 different courses, and by the end of it, each of us was stuffed but very, very satisfied. And as I said, it was probably one of the best restaurant experiences I've ever had in my life. As we reflected on it at the end of the evening, trying to work out, okay, what made it so different? Because I have had steak before, and I've had the other things that we've eaten. And it wasn't particularly one thing. It started the moment we walked in the door. It started with Dan the Man. It started with the free stuff. It started with just this, the flexibility or the risk of trying things that you may not like or you may not have tried before. There was just this overall culture that this restaurant had created that made it so special. To the point that I've now just told 200 people in one weekend how amazing Maple and Ash is in Chicago. I've also probably told another 100 people how amazing it was, because it left such a mark on my life. Life's probably fairly dramatic, but you get the point. We are all creating a culture, whether it be good or whether it be bad. And this restaurant had created such a culture that it made incredible experiences for those that dined in their restaurant. And what does it look like for us as followers of Jesus to create a kingdom culture that leaves a mark on the people we come in contact with every single day? Are we known as a culture of bitterness, judgment, unforgiveness? Or is the culture that we live one of grace, one of mercy, one of love, and one of forgiveness? What an impact a kingdom culture like that, when lived out, would have on our families, on our church, on our workplaces, in our schools, in the community, and even the nation that we live. It would be wrong to look at this parable of the unmerciful servant purely from a perspective of how to deal with money and how to deal with finance, whilst that is important. It could also be an appendix to the story of the parable of the prodigal son, with the themes of God, sin, grace, and salvation. Because they're the themes that carry through both the prodigal son parable and the parable of the unmerciful servant. And this morning, I just want to take a few moments just to share three things, three ideas that jumped out at me as I started to look at this parable of the unmerciful servant. And the first one was this idea of the power of abundant forgiveness. I just want to read from verse 21 of that section that Daniel read to us. And then Peter came to Jesus and asked, "Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to 7 times? And Jesus answered, "I tell you, not 7 times, but 77 times, or 70 times 7. So here we find Peter. I reckon Peter's in a position, you know, we all sort of got a vibe from Peter if you read the scriptures. You know, he's probably pretty confident. He's a bit cheeky and he thinks, actually, I've got this nailed. I know under Jewish law that actually I have to forgive people 3 times. That's just what we have to do. So I'm gonna up the ante a little bit. And Jesus is going to think I'm pretty great. So he goes up to Jesus and says, "Hey, Jesus, do I have to forgive him 7 times? Double beyond, you know, what is expected of me?" And then instantly Peter's deflated and brought back down to earth. And Jesus looks at him and says, "No, Peter, it's 70 times 7. Now, there's no shortage of opinions and studies, and you only have to Google 70 times 7, as I did, and find out there's a whole lot of things that come up and theories as to what this actually means. But in Hebrew, the alphabet is actually alphanumeric. Now, this presents a problem for me straight up because I failed both English and math, so we're in a whole lot of trouble. But being alphanumeric, you take the letters and they represent a number. So 70 times 7 is... anyone? Come on, 490. I got it written down to get away with that one. 490. 490 is the numerical value for the word tamim, which means complete, perfect, finished. So if we forgive 70 times 7, it's complete, it's perfect, it's finished. There's another theory that it's also the numerical value of the phrase, "let your heart be perfect." So when we forgive, our hearts are in this perfect place. There's reference into Daniel where it talks around 70 times 7 being a reference to the end of the age. So Peter, you just keep forgiving while you're on this earth. You just keep forgiving, you keep forgiving, and you keep forgiving. Or 70 times 7 is symbolic for infinite. Now, as I said, failed both maths and English, so I'm not even going to try to entertain, and I'm definitely not a theologian. But what I do know is what Jesus is doing is calling us to a higher standard. Not just the bare minimum, but abundance. So when it comes to forgiveness, it's not just doing what we have to do, it's going above and beyond, way more than what is expected. This abundant idea of forgiveness. And that's not new, right? We can read the parables of Jesus and the stories of Jesus in the Gospels, and we see that this actually happens time and time again, that Jesus calls us to go above and beyond. Someone asks for your shirt, give him your coat. If someone slaps you in the face, turn the other cheek. If someone forces you to go a mile, go 2 miles. And that one in particular, you know, it's so culturally relevant where the Roman soldiers of the time would come up to the Jews and say, "I want you to take my pack and march with me for 1 kilometer so I don't have to carry it." They knew exactly what Jesus was referring to in the context of their day and their time. But Jesus said, "No, don't go a mile. Go above and beyond. Go abundantly more than what is expected of you and walk to." You see, hurt, betrayal, being let down, broken promises, broken commitments, broken vows. These and a host of other things are things we'll experience in our lifetime. We are not immune from them. I guarantee you, without a shadow of a doubt, you will be hurt. You will be betrayed. Someone will break your heart. Someone will break your commitment. Whether you're a young child or an older person, it is something that we all walk. We cannot avoid it. And they cause great pain. But how we respond in these circumstances, how we respond in these situations can have an incredible impact on the life that we move forward in after these events. In fact, as I was doing some research, I had a bit of a look into it. I was interested to know what are the differences between someone who walks a life of forgiveness and what is the difference between someone who walks a life of unforgiveness in the natural sense? Does it change how my health is? Does it change the way I am as a person? I came across a study done by the Mayo Clinic in the States, and they'd produced a paper and the findings were so clear. They surveyed a group of men, half and half, half of them were living under incredible pain and hadn't been able to come to that place of forgiveness, and those that had. And these are some of the things that they found in the men that had chosen to forgive. They found that they had healthier relationships. They had improved mental health, less anxiety, stress, and hostility. They had lower blood pressure, fewer symptoms of depression. They had a stronger immune system, improved heart health, improved self-esteem. And these are just some of the practical things that take place when we choose to live a life of abundant forgiveness. It actually affects our health. Our bodies can function properly. That's not even thinking around the spiritual consequences of what it means to live a life of forgiveness, of abundant forgiveness. A few months ago, I went to the doctor because I had this small mole. It was literally the size of a grain of rice. It wasn't big at all. And it wasn't really healing and it just looked a bit funky. So I decided I better go get it checked out. Now I get skin checks pretty regularly and I'd actually had one about 6 months ago, but this one was hanging around. It just looked, you know, different color and that kind of thing. And so I went to the doctor to get it checked out. And there's a picture that I'll, apologies in advance for seeing so much of my body and this time in the morning. As I said, this mole was less than a size of a grain of rice. And I looked down at the scar the guy left behind and I just like, are you kidding me? You've taken half my chest away. And I said something to him. I said, wow, that's a pretty big cut for such a small mole. He said, well, we had to make sure we got all of it. There had to be margin. And as I thought about it in the context of forgiveness or unforgiveness, there is no room for unforgiveness in our lives. We absolutely have to cut it out, and we have to cut it out with margin. If the doctor hadn't have cut that mole, the perimeter, and left a really good margin around it, there's every likelihood there might just be one cell left of that cancer that was there, which would then grow and spread and cause me more issues down the track. And that's exactly what it's like when it comes to unforgiveness. Unless we cut it out, unless we deal with it in the moment in entirely, and sometimes that can leave a pretty big scar, it can come back and hurt us down the track. So as followers of Jesus, as those part of his kingdom, we absolutely have to live with abundant forgiveness. Is it easy? Absolutely not. Does it take the pain away straight away? No, it doesn't. But it is ultimately the best way that we can live our lives. Abundant forgiveness. The second thing that stood out to me was this idea of the power of grace and mercy. And again, let me just read a small part from the reading that Daniel read for us. And at this, the servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I'll pay back everything. The servant's master took pity on him. He cancelled his debt and let him go. Now, I'm in business. So each day, Monday to Friday, I work in a business environment. And I kind of find it interesting that Jesus would use the analogy of finance and transactions to make this point around forgiveness. Because I would guarantee that the idea of business and finance is fertile ground for offense and things like unforgiveness to come up. In the 20-odd 7 years that I've been working in the business, I've experienced these kinds of things. If you're in business or, you know, even outside of business in transactional interactions with family, the area of finance has the potential to cause heartache and to cause grief. It sometimes brings out the best and the worst in people. The ones that have hurt me the most over the years are probably the ones that came from people who were closest to you, where people that you had trusted, who you'd invested in, who actually meant something to your life, go and do something that you just didn't see coming, whether it be stealing, whether it be, you know, not honoring debts or whatever it might be. There's one particular situation that I experienced from someone who I considered a friend, and someone actually as a younger kid when I was in my late teens even looked up to, who made some dubious life choices which had a financial impact upon our business. And it hurts. The ones closest to you actually hurt probably more than the ones that are people you don't know. And as I've journeyed over the years, and, you know, again, you know, I think I'd be naive to think that it probably won't happen again. There's probably a couple of things that I've learned along the way that help me deal with these situations when they come up. And this isn't just a finance thing. It's actually a life thing in how we deal with hurt and bitterness and wrongdoing. And there's three quick points I want to make. The first one is generosity. Generosity overcomes greed. When greed is at the heart of the offense or the action that is done to you, I've found that when we act in the opposite spirit and act with generosity, it absolutely changes the environment and changes the circumstances. And probably more than the most important thing, it changes my heart position to the situation. When we repay greed with generosity, something happens. That's the kingdom culture that I'm talking about. When we deploy gratitude, even in the midst of incredible hurt, heartache, and pain, gratitude overcomes those things. When we take a moment to be intentional and deliberate, to look at the individual, the circumstance, or the person that might have offended or caused this issue in our lives, and actually start to go, okay, God, what am I grateful for in this person's life? Because I know there's a whole lot of stuff I'm not grateful for. But what is it that I'm grateful for? How do I look into this situation and this circumstance and choose to believe the best and choose to see the good and the right and the just and the pure, even though there's things that have taken place that don't fall into those categories? How do I see this circumstance with gratitude? It helps overcome the wounds and the offense. And the third thing that I've learned is to love. Love conquers all, right? We read that. Love conquers all. And what love also does is enables us, well, to give us empathy, to understand the situation, the circumstance that the other person may have led them to this act or whatever it might be, to give a better understanding. So I've found in the midst of the moments of where forgiveness is due, where hurt and bitterness has flown, to walk in generosity, to walk in gratitude, and to walk in love. 1 Peter 4:8 tells us this: above all, love each other deeply. Love each other deeply, because love covers a multitude of sin. I've been reading, or just started, a book by Erwin McManus. Erwin McManus, well-known speaker, author, runs the Mosaic Church in Los Angeles, in downtown Hollywood. And he made this one short little statement that's jumped out of the page when I looked at it, when I was reading it. And he said, "We are always free to do more. We are always free to do more. More generosity, more gratitude, more love. When you are hurt, when you are broken, when you're offended, when those things happen in your life, we can always choose to do more. And because we're part of the kingdom culture, we don't have to respond in the way the world would respond. We can choose to respond in a way that Jesus would have us respond. We can choose to respond in a way that Jesus himself responded, with more generosity, more gratitude, and more love. We must fill our lives with grace and mercy, because it's in here we find the power to walk in the kingdom that God has called us to be a part of. The third thing, the power of trust. The power of trust. And again, let me just read a short part from that passage that we read at the start. "And then the master called the servant in. 'You wicked servant,' he said, 'I cancelled all the debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you?'" As humans, we do everything we can to avoid pain. We do everything we can to avoid pain. We try and avoid it to the nth degree whenever we can. You only have to go to, you know, think about your own physical well-being and your health. Who didn't go to the gym this week? Who doesn't go for a run? Because when we do those things, they cause pain. It's not pleasant. It's not pleasant going to the gym or going for a really big long run or whatever it might be. We avoid those things. And we avoid the pain that comes when there's things like offense involved and forgiveness. You see, we're hardwired for fight, flight, or freeze. And say it again. We're hardwired for fight, flight, or freeze. So when something comes, when our spidey senses are up, when we're starting to feel like there's something going down, that someone's about to hurt us, when there's a circumstance that we're about to face, we respond in one of those three ways. We either fight back, normally with double portion, just to make sure they get a bit more than what they gave us. We flight, so we run for the hills as far as we can to get away from it so that it doesn't happen again. Or we absolutely just freeze and have no idea what the next step looks like. We fight, we flight, or we freeze. Often we see trust like a bit of a bank account. So as long as we're depositing our trust into that bank account with the relationship that we have or the people that we do life with, as long as we're topping it up every now and then and the balance is in good order, we can actually make a bit of a withdrawal on that every now and then. As long as it stays in the black, all right? As long as it's, you know, in the positive. So we deposit, bit of trust, deposit, and actually I'll just let you down, I'll just take a little bit out. Trust doesn't work like that. Trust is more like this balloon here. We make a deposit. We create that trust. And this can happen over a really long period of time. And as our relationship grows, our trust grows, and we get to know each other better, and things are all great in the world. But then what happens? There comes a moment when something takes place which actually breaches that trust. And before you know it, that trust is absolutely broken. And it's gone. And you have to go the whole way back to the start again to rebuild that trust. And as I said at the start, we want to avoid pain. We want to avoid pain. So why would we open ourselves up to being hurt again? Why would we open ourselves up to trusting again or forgiving? Because there's every likelihood it could end up like that. But today I want to tell you that that's not how Jesus views trust. It's not this balloon. It's not a bank account. His trust is housed in this vault that is impenetrable. It is housed in this vault that cannot be tapped into. It cannot have that trust taken away. You can trust him. You can go to the bank with the trust that Jesus has. And unlike us, who will let people down, Jesus will never let us down. His trust is overwhelming. There's a verse which has been key in my life. And it says from Proverbs chapter 3, 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not in your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. We have to trust God with the circumstances we find ourselves in. We have to trust God with the other people who may have inflicted those things upon us. It's not our job to enact justice in the circumstances. Our job is to forgive. Our job is to trust again. Our job is to forgive again and again and again. And again. C.S. Lewis makes this great quote, "I can forgive the inexcusable in others because Christ forgave me." I can forgive the inexcusable in others because Christ forgave me. It doesn't mean the pain goes away. It doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. It doesn't mean it is going to need a tremendous amount of courage to trust again and to forgive again. But it does mean we're responding in a way that Jesus would ask us to respond. Colossians chapter 3, verse 12. And therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And all these virtues put on love, and over all these virtues put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. I can stand here as someone who knows what it means to forgive because I know that Christ has forgiven me. I know the things I do, the things I say, the thoughts I have, the actions I do fall well short of the calling and the standard that Jesus expects of me. And he's extended his grace and his mercy on my life. The least I can do is extend that same grace and mercy to those in my life who I may have been hurt by or offended by and choose to forgive. There is incredible power in trust. There is incredible power in grace and mercy. And there is incredible power in abundant forgiveness. As I said at the start, this parable is also not just about money, but it's also about God, sin, grace, and salvation. And that, my friends, is an absolute message of hope. That there is a God who created us, who's willing to forgive our debts 100%. Forgive us of all the things that we have done that have grieved him. Without bringing it up again, his trust is like a vault. I'm going to invite the music team up and I want to just create a bit of space to reflect on these thoughts and the ideas around forgiveness or unforgiveness for that matter. And I don't for one moment think this isn't potentially a heavy thing for people to process because I don't know each of your stories. I don't know the things that have been done to you. I don't know the things that you've had to walk through and the brutality of it, the significance of it, or even the weight of it. But what I do know is that there is a loving Father who wants to come and take you in his arms and help you take those next steps. That where you may feel frozen, you move forward. Of where you want to run, you can stand firm and know that he will call you. And where you want to fight, you can choose grace and can choose mercy. So the guys are going to lead us in a song. And as this song is playing, I'll just get you to stay in your seats. For some of us, we may need to seek forgiveness. There may be some people that we have to go to that we've hurt, that we've done something against. Today is a day to start that process of walking in freedom. For some of us, we may need to forgive those who've hurt us. And I get that that's a big call. For some of us, you actually just may need to forgive yourself. Today's the day to walk free from the bondage of self-oppression and self-unforgiveness. And for some of us, we may need to receive the forgiveness that can only come from the Father as he cancels away every sin, every wrong, it says, welcome to my family. So what if today was the day you could break free from the weight of unforgiveness and walk in the absolute freedom, forgiveness, grace, mercy, and love? So I'd ask you just take a moment just while we're led through this song and just reflect on those. And where do you sit? What's your response? What's your response to the things that we've heard today and read. And let's choose to respond in a way that continues to advance his kingdom and our involvement in it.